to the official podcast for St. Philip's Episcopal Church in Rochester, Michigan. You can learn more about our church at our website, stpfeeds.org. Our Sunday services are at 8 and 10 a.m., and all are welcome. This podcast is the sermon for Sunday, February 20th, 2022, by the Reverend Eric Williams.
Well, our gospel today is a continuation of the Sermon on the Plain, which is very much like the Sermon on the Mount from Matthew. It is, I like to think of it as the entire Christian faith, if we were to put it into bullet points. Just no stories, no parables, just the bullet points, just the basics. And they're incredibly simple. Do this, don't do this, it's a piece of cake. The only problem is, all of the bullet points in today's gospel are impossible, right? They go against common sense, they go against our experience, they go against what the world teaches us. When someone hits you, you're supposed to hit them back harder, right? To stop them from hitting you. When someone robs you, you're supposed to call the police and get them arrested. You're not supposed to turn the other cheek. You're not supposed to hand over your shirt. Imagine this in practical terms. Someone steals your coat and you strip down and take off your shirt and give it to them as well. I haven't seen that. I don't know about you. It seems impossible. What is Jesus getting at? Jesus, I believe, is using these teachings to show us a world that is different from the one we know. This is his teaching to his disciples. They're just starting out following him, and he wants them to know right up front that the kingdom that they are becoming part of is nothing like the world that they have known up to this point. A world of competition, a world of selfishness, a world of protecting your own and getting ahead, a world of earthly success. All of that goes by in favor of this new kingdom of God. There's a lot of difficult stuff in this passage. I have to say, in 30 years as a priest, or 30 years or so, that the issue that troubles people the most in their spiritual lives, the one they wrestle with the most, and let me know if this is true for you, the most difficult thing that prevents us from really growing in our faith is the issue of forgiveness. Forgiveness is perhaps the most difficult challenge we face as human beings, because we spend our lives, almost every single day, we have opportunities to hurt other people and to be hurt by them. This goes way back to our earliest memories of childhood. Mom loved you more. You were the favored son. You could do nothing wrong. Everything I did was wrong, right? These are early things. And what's comforting to me about the Bible is that when we read back into the stories of the Bible, we find that nothing has changed. That the very issues we face in our interpersonal relationships, in our families, in our relating to other people, are expressed in the stories of the Bible, going way back to the beginning. Remember Adam and Eve, who violated God's commandment and ate of the forbidden fruit and were kicked out, and then they had a family. The first two kids, Cain and Abel, were just model brothers, weren't they? They got along so well. So well, in fact, that Cain, who was jealous of Abel, because Abel's offering was favored by God, it enraged Cain so much that he killed his brother. The very first family unit we meet in the Bible ends in murder. So we're doing pretty well if we're avoiding murder. Now, there were moments growing up when I thought about murdering my brother. Thought about it. I didn't act on it, thank heavens. But there were moments, right? We know what this struggle is like, and so forgiveness becomes so difficult. How are we to forgive? And if you look at that story from Genesis, from Adam and Eve all the way through the end of the book, what we see, generation after generation after generation, are broken relationships and difficult family situations. Abraham, right, who has two sons, Ishmael and Isaac. Ishmael is kicked out because of the jealousy of his wife Sarah. Isaac is the favored son. Then Isaac has two sons, Jacob and Esau, right? They got along wonderfully. At one point, Jacob was fleeing from Esau because Esau wanted to kill him because he had stolen Esau's birthright. This goes on and on. Jacob then has 12 sons who become the founders of the 12 tribes of Israel, and they got along really great as well. You can imagine 12 sons all competing for their father's affection and approval. The eldest thought he had it, but he didn't, because Jacob was absolutely clear that the only son he cared about was Joseph, the youngest, the one with his beloved wife, Rachel. And Joseph, who kind of lorded it over his brothers, ended up in the same situation as Cain and Abel. The brothers conspired to kill him. The last minute, they decided not to. I think it was Reuben who decided, better not kill him. Let's just sell him into slavery. I didn't think that was an option with my brother, but, you know. So Joseph gets sold into slavery. He spends long years in jail for a crime he did not commit. And then, because of God's intervention, because God blessed Joseph with the ability to interpret dreams, Joseph becomes exalted to become the second most powerful man in the most powerful kingdom of its day, the mighty kingdom of Egypt. And then a famine comes, and the brothers are starving to death. Everyone in that region was dying. But Joseph, who had been prepared by God, had stored up reserves of grain for Egypt, and they had plenty of food. And so people from the surrounding area came to beg for food, including Joseph's brothers. Now imagine this moment. There's Joseph, unrecognizable, dressed as a prince of Egypt. Joseph, who sees, can he believe it, his brothers showing up to beg for food. They don't recognize him at all, but he recognized them. What a moment. What a moment for revenge. Finally, after all these years, sold into slavery, suffering in jail, thanks to his terrible brothers, he can get back at them. But Joseph does something pretty much unique in that whole family story. Joseph is able not to take vengeance, but to forgive his brothers. Now he plays with them a little bit. He makes them squirm for a little while, but he forgives them. And if you read today's gospel, Old Testament lesson carefully, you'll see how he's able to do it, because this is the challenge. How do we forgive when it makes no earthly sense, when we're hurt, when we want to get back at people, when we're angry? What do we do? How do we overcome that and have the power to forgive? Joseph tells us how. He looks at his brothers, and he thinks about all the long years that have passed, how much he has missed his father, how much he has even missed those ungrateful brothers of his. And he sees what's happened, that God, through this long and winding road, has brought Joseph to exactly this moment where he has the power to rescue and save his entire family, the entire tribe. And he says, aha. You thought this was all your decision. You thought this was meant for evil. And you know what? This was all part of God's plan. In the end, it wasn't about you. It wasn't about me. He takes himself out of the center of the picture, and he puts God in the center. And he says, maybe this was all a bigger plan of God's to bring about salvation. Maybe it was necessary that I go through all of that so that I could be in this place at this time to do God's will. Wow. What a shift. What a shift to take himself and his own need for revenge and his own stored up anger and resentment and to put it to the side and to be open to see God at work. I think that's the secret. I think that's how we find the grace and the power to forgive. Because when it's all about us and our resentment and our anger, then we can't forgive, because all we're consumed with is our own selves. But when we put ourselves to the side and see how God is working, amazing things can happen. Yesterday, I had a phone call with my brother. You know, the brother I wanted to kill, might have sold into slavery. We had, you know, a difficult time growing up, and he went through a lot of difficult times himself. But I want to say how powerful it was to talk to him. As time has gone on, and this sometimes happens in families, when we lived together, we drove each other crazy. We shared a room, which was probably part of the problem. But now, we have come over the years to appreciate each other so much more. And it was great to hear about him, with all of his struggles, to hear that he's doing well, to hear that he's in a really good space. And he was able to tell me how much our relationship has actually meant to him. That was a moment for me of tremendous grace, to know, I couldn't have pictured it when we were at each other so many years ago, but to know that we now have the possibility for a new and much richer relationship. What a gift. I'm still kind of working through that phone call and what it meant to me. But that's what I pray for. I pray for the grace to be able to take the bigger perspective, to get out of the way with all of my neediness and anger and resentment, and to invite the presence of God. One of the great writers on the issue of forgiveness is Lewis Smedes. He wrote a whole bunch of books on forgiveness. One is called, I think, The Art of Forgiveness. And he says we often get it wrong with forgiveness. We think forgiveness means forget, right? Forgive and forget. If I forgive you, it means I'm saying to you what you did was okay. He said that's absolutely not the case. Forgiveness means looking the evil square in the face and saying what happened was wrong. I do not accept it. I do not like it. It hurt me. It was awful. Telling the truth about the reality of the situation. And then doing what Joseph did, saying with all of my right for revenge, I'm going to put that to the side and I am going to give up my right to vengeance. I'm going to say to you what you did was not right, and yet I release all of my anger. I release all of my hatred. I release all of my resentment. I will no longer hold this against you. Sometimes it's not possible to get all the way there. Sometimes all we can do is a first step. We can say, I don't know if I can see you in person. I don't know if I can talk to you face to face, but I'm going to pray for you. I'm going to wish you well. I'm going to ask God to bless you. Sometimes that's the most important first step, because that begins to put God back into this relationship. The other thing Smedes says is that forgiveness is not the same thing as reconciliation. Joseph was able to reconcile with his brothers. At the end of this story, they are hugging and weeping, and they are restored as brothers. With my phone call with my brother, we had that sense of reconciliation. We don't always get there. Sometimes the person who hurt us is no longer part of our lives. Sometimes they die before we're able to reconcile. But we can still forgive. We don't have to hold on to that resentment. Somebody once wrote that, you know, failing to forgive someone or hating someone is like drinking poison and hoping the other person dies, right? Because it corrodes us from the inside. All that anger is not good for us. So we're getting rid of that in a way for our own soul's health. And Smedes puts it this way: forgiving someone is like releasing a prisoner and then discovering that the prisoner was you. Let yourself out of jail. So my invitation to you this week, as you think about these scriptures, let them kind of mull around, is to look into your mind. I bet there is somebody right now that's in your mind and heart that you're thinking, gosh, you know, that relationship is not where it should be. Could be a spouse, could be a child, could be a parent, could be a co-worker, could be a neighbor. I mean, I got a few in my own life. What would it take to take the first step to invite God to begin to heal that relationship? What would it look like to work towards releasing some of that pent-up resentment and anger? And you know what happens when we do that? We unlock the power of God's love in our lives. When we're able to even take that first step, we reopen a channel which has been blocked, because what Jesus said in the Sermon on the Plain was, forgive and you will be forgiven. It's not that God is a tit-for-tat person. It's that when you begin to forgive, that blocked channel of grace begins to open up, and you can feel and experience more of God's love and forgiveness in your own life. And the more you do that, the more able you are to forgive other people more. And the more you forgive them, the more God's grace multiplies, until there is this virtuous cycle of love and forgiveness. Boy, wouldn't it be great if we could live like that? Wouldn't it be great if we were so full of the abundant love of God that it just flowed out from us into every single relationship, the good, the bad, and the difficult? May that be the journey that you're on. I know it's what I pray for, and I pray for it for you too. May God's forgiveness take root in your heart, following the example of Joseph, heeding the commandments of Jesus. May we more and more become a people who know what forgiveness is, the very root of our soul. Amen.